Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Peter King for a weekly Hey, How Are You? With playoff implications. Finally, here we are, Peter. It actually happened. The 49ers won 10 in a row as the Vikings started backpedaling, and they're the 2 seed. It's kind of unbelievable where this whole thing started and how they crossed the finish line with Brock Purdy and a defense that feels like it's really significant. This is really set up to be a very interesting postseason, not just with a game at Levi Stadium to start it all off on Saturday, but all the way around. We got intrigue everywhere.
Yeah, you know, I was just this afternoon, I'm one of the voters for the Associated Press Awards every year, the MVP and all that stuff. So I found myself today going over everything on the ballot, you know. And so one of the things I was going over is offensive rookie of the year. And I said to myself, Brock Purdy has played only 1/3 of the snaps about for the 49ers this year. But I must have spent 15 minutes, you know, going back and forth, back and forth. And I'm not going to vote for him number one, but I think I'm going to vote for him 2 or 3. Just because, you know, as I wrote in my column the other day, you know, over the last 5 weeks, he's a top 5 NFL quarterback. And that's one of the most incredible things you can say about this weird, weird NFL season. But I keep finding myself... there's so many things that happen in the course of any season that, so many things that are odd. And there are a huge number of things this year that are odd. The Giants making the playoffs, Jacksonville winning that division. So there's some weird things, the Lions being good again. Do you realize the Detroit Lions in the last 9 games are 7-2, and Jared Goff's touchdown to interception ratio is 15-0? I mean, you please explain that to me, you know, after watching his last year with the Rams. But anyway, a lot of weird things, but I can't help but think that the marriage of Kyle Shanahan and this Mr. Irrelevant, who's now so exceedingly relevant, is really one of the stories of this year.
The other two candidates that you might put ahead of Purdy would be Walker and Thomas. Well, I presume you don't have to tell me which one it is, but
no, I'm happy to tell you. I'm thinking I've got 4 people who I'm really thinking a lot about, and I hate when I always do it with skilled players, because, like, for instance, the Seahawks have 2 starting rookie tackles. And the left tackle's been okay. The right tackle's really pretty good. But I'm thinking of Kenneth Walker, Tyler Allgeier, who's the running back for Atlanta, who had 1,000 yards. Both those guys had 1,000-yard seasons. And then I'm thinking of Chris Olave. Olave, I think I would have edging Garrett Wilson of the Jets, but they're close. And then I'm thinking of Brock Purdy. So we can vote for 3. You go 1, 2, 3. So out of those 4, I'm going to pick 3 to be 1, 2, 3 in offensive rookie of the year. I'm kind of thinking of Allgeier the Atlanta back, but I want to look at it one more time tomorrow morning before I vote.
It's hard to predict anything in football. How many 10-game winning streaks do you think we might see over the next decade in this sport? I mean, it feels like a 10-game winning streak is a real big number, and that's what the Niners are going into the postseason with. It's extraordinary given the volatility that you see every single week to week from every single roster.
Yeah. The great thing about what the 49ers have done is that they had a crisis in the middle of arguably their toughest schedule stretch of the season, and they won every game. I mean, I can just tell you something. I remember being at that 49ers game against the Dolphins, where obviously one quarter into the game, they've got this thing that happened that I remember. You know, and I hate to be overly dramatic about this, but I met with Kyle Shanahan for a few minutes after the game, and one of the things he said is when one of the trainers went up to him, I think the head athletic trainer went up to him in the middle of the second quarter, there was a pause in play, he goes, "Hey, Garoppolo has got a foot injury, and it looks like he's going to be out for the year," or words to that effect. And you know, obviously, through it looks a little bit better, but still. And Kyle Shanahan had to like put the stiff upper lip on it, like you know, all is well, you know, like Kevin Bacon in Animal House, you know, like, hey, all is well, no problem. And so, you know, when in reality he's thinking, what the F are we gonna do here? And I think, but his work, I kind of remember this. We may have talked about it, but his work with Brock Purdy, you know, in the summer, I think really told him that he was kind of morose about the whole thing that day, but he also knew that with no ill feeling toward Nate Sudfeld, there was a reason why he picked Brock Purdy over Nate Sudfeld back in August or early September. And the reason is very, very simple, because he simply trusted him a little bit more than he trusted Nate Sudfeld. And, you know, we've talked about this a couple of times in the last month, but you know, the fact is, I think people who were absolutely eliminating Brock Purdy from having any chance to do what he's done really had not studied his pedigree, which is, you know, when you play 48 games of major college football, you've seen a few things. I mean, but obviously it's incredible what has happened.
Let me look less granularly for a minute. This is not a game where you see a lot of ways that Seattle is going to play much differently than they did in the first two times they've played. But what is their path to victory other than a crap load of turnovers or a catastrophic injury?
I think Seattle's way to victory is Geno Smith, who's not going to have a lot of time compared to what he normally has. But I think it's Geno Smith making 4 to 6 plays in the intermediate and deep areas of the field. That's it. I just don't think they can bang out 4 long drives in this game, because really, you know, the important thing for Seattle, even though nobody's going to sit here and say that the 49ers have Patrick Mahomes and the miracle offense of Kansas City, at least right now, you know, but they want to keep the ball away from the 49ers. They need to have a 35-25 time of possession lead. The way to do that is to hit a few plays so they're not always seeing 8 people near the line of scrimmage. And if I were Shane Waldron this week, I would be thinking this has got to be a game where our wide receivers really help us in this game. We need to make some plays downfield. We need to get 4 to 6 big chunks in the course of this game.
I agree. I think that's the way they got to do it. If the Seahawks win this game, DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett.
You got to have 160 yards.
Exactly. I was about to say 150 yard, 10 catch, 2 touchdown afternoon where whoever got matched up on D'Amador Lenore really took advantage of that matchup. And you can see Lenore getting picked on week to week here. And it's not because he's a bad player. It's because he is the only
alternative. They're not good.
Exactly. I mean, the amount of guys on this league who Peter would be the worst player on the 49ers defense is a long list of very good football players.
Yeah. I think the one thing about this game, and this is one of the things I've gotten to enjoy over the years about Pete Carroll. You know, I think Pete Carroll is one of those guys who can sell ice to Eskimos. And I can tell you, by the time they get on the plane Friday midday for San Jose, the Seattle Seahawks are going to have no doubt in their mind that they're going to win this game. I know that sounds funny, but Pete is one of those guys that they will come up with a plan knowing that if they execute their plan, they've got a good chance to win the game. And that's what a good coach does with his team. And look, I was thinking about this today. I was walking my dog. I was thinking about all the matchups, and I was just thinking to myself, you know, Buffalo would have a lot harder time right now today, in my opinion, beating Pittsburgh the way they've played recently, because Pittsburgh will just grind you into a pulp, and their defense is really going to damage you, okay? And I thought the same thing about the Lions. If the Lions somehow had gotten in with, you know, with the way they have played recently, I think they would give the 49ers a tougher game. I don't think they beat the Niners, but I think they give the Niners a tougher game than Seattle. But then I always think of Pete Carroll, and I always think of there's something about the Seahawks. There just is. They're the thing that you just can't kill. They're always going to be competitive, and in a rivalry game like this, you never know. I mean, I'd be surprised if the 49ers lost, but I think Pete Carroll understands how to win this game. It's just being able to execute that plan to win this game.
Who is better served in what looks like it's going to be a rainy, windy day? And when I say rainy and windy, I don't mean like intermittent showers. I mean it might dump.
You would think Seattle, because you would think that Seattle is used to playing in that. But Seattle really, first of all, they've got a guy in Geno Smith who, I mean, I don't know what his history is in a game like this, but they certainly haven't had horrible weather this year to play in. And so many guys there are new, including the quarterback. On the other hand, you'd probably say the same thing about Brock Purdy, because Brock Purdy, I am sure, even though he's from Phoenix, has played in the Midwest in November a lot, you know, for 4 years. So I'm sure he's played in some crummy games. That's a really good question. I don't think it really is going to have it certainly will have an impact on how the game is played, no question about it. But I don't think it's going to have an impact on it, on giving one team an advantage over the other.
We've already got a lot of NFL offseason news starting to develop, and we want to get to some of it with you here. Yep. But my last question, just concerning the Niners and how they got here. And I always like, Peter, how you are the right person to talk to about, you know, things that are borderline. Is this, how historic is this? Christian McCaffrey's acquisition has already borne fruit that has seen more scrimmage yards by any midseason acquisition in football history. McCaffrey's already got that with the 49ers. He really has been the skeleton key to get them gaudy point totals that were not to be seen really before he joined. Are we talking about, and obviously, you know, where this story ends, will determine how you might want to answer this question, and we don't know that yet. But are we talking about one of the singular greatest trades in the history of midseason football trading here in Christian McCaffrey?
I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting question. It's hard. It's really hard to make that statement after, what, 8 games? Maybe 9. I forget how many it's been, but...
But like sometimes when you see it, you start thinking it. Like you said, you've seen 6 games out of Brock Purdy, and he's on your list.
Yeah. But I think this. I think McCaffrey. What's so interesting is that even though he has been a little bit banged up, I was starting to think that Christian McCaffrey was getting to the point in his career where if he played 12 game seasons, he'd be happy. But that hasn't been the case this year. You know, he's been able to hang in there, and really, you know, let's be honest. They need him to play 4 games in the next 5 weeks. That's all there is to it. And so, and he is vitally, vitally important. He will be as important as any single player on Saturday, weather like that. And I think what has impressed me so much about him is that, you know, when you play for Carolina, you are never on national TV. Nobody ever cares about your games over the last, say, 3 years. And, you know, so when that happens, and then you come where every game is like a showcase game, every game is a big game to some degree. And he has just come through game after game after game. I can't be more impressed with a guy. And at the time I said, oof, man, the Niners gave up a lot, especially for a guy who's starting to play half seasons. You know, and he has really been, to me, it's hard to say a pleasant surprise because you know if he's healthy, he's going to produce like this. But I think Kyle Shanahan has done a lot of really smart things with him, scheme-wise. And look, everybody, when he's on the field, you know there's a real good chance the ball is coming to him. And yet, he's had some open fields this year that probably I didn't expect. And whenever I see that, I say, hey, he's a great player, but he's also got people designing plays for him to get him that open.
Peter King, he told us last week that he was voting Nick Bosa his defensive player of the year. My final Niner question for you today, you actually have Nick Bosa in your top 5 for league MVP overall. He's the only non-quarterback that you've got in there. Why do you believe he belongs in that lofty of a conversation?
Well, I had Justin Jefferson in there before Bosa. And to be honest with you, a lot of it is team related. When I do an MVP list, the people on my list are almost always going to play for winning teams, unless there's something so extraordinary that happens that you've got to put somebody else on it. But I just think the best defense in football, and it isn't close, is San Francisco's. He's the most important player in that defense, the keystone. I'm not going to say that he's, you know, like mentally, he's not what Fred Warner is in terms of being the nerve center of a defense. He has specific assignments that he has to carry out. My point is that he keeps every offensive coordinator up nights worrying about how we're going to do it. And I think, you know what I think was kind of his seminal moment this year, and the moment that I don't want to be, this is a little bit gratuitous, but I'll tell you what I was thinking when I watched the play against Vegas, where Colton Miller, who's the 4th best left tackle in football, fourth rated left tackle in football this year, Pro Football Focus. And we drove Colton Miller back into Jarrett Stidham, and Stidham threw the wounded duck that was intercepted and run back, and then they get the field goal to win the game. I mean, that is what a great player does. That's what That's what a great player in all sports. You want the ball in Steph Curry's hands in overtime when there's a gigantic play coming. And, you know, defensively, they needed a huge play to stop the Raiders, who had been going up and down the field uncharacteristically. And they needed something to happen. He made it happen. And plays like that just really stick in my mind when I'm voting for things like this. And look, if I had been, I'm sure there are five times this year where actually the closest guy to him, in my opinion, this year is Chris Jones of the Chiefs, who I just think he is to 2022 what Aaron Donald has been the prior seasons. He has been absolutely incredible, and he's close, but he's number two on my list, and Bosa's number one.
There have only been two coaches fired since the end of the season, and five total if you include the three that got it during the season. A, are there going to be any more firings? And B, where is Jim Harbaugh going to end up if he does, in fact, leave Michigan? Well, let me put it this way. What's the place that makes the most sense for him if he leaves Michigan?
Well, you got to figure if Harbaugh goes somewhere, it's going to have to be for a lot of money. And so who out there right now would pay Jim Harbaugh an awful lot of money? I don't think Michael Bidwill would in Arizona. I think there are two places that I would call, I don't want to say desperate, but I would call places that really want an answer and want to win like right now. And one is Denver and the other is Carolina. And those two places basically have money is not an object if you can solve their problem. So I honestly think that whoever can convince, you know, the Walton money and George Payton, the general manager of Denver, that they can fix Russell Wilson, that's the one who they're going to want to hire. Will they believe that Jim Harbaugh can fix Russell Wilson? Will they believe that Sean Payton can fix Russell Wilson and will want to fix Russell Wilson? I think that's a big question about Payton, by the way. Does he really want to coach this year, or does he want to wait for a job where he has a superstar quarterback? I mean, I would also just say two things about the playoffs this year. Okay, first of all, I think it's going to be interesting whether if the Chargers or the Cowboys have desultory losses this weekend, would the owners of either of those teams think we can do better with Peyton and try to go after Peyton and fire their coaches? I don't think it will happen in either place. I think Brandon Staley will be back. I think Mike McCarthy will be back. But let's see what happens this weekend before we know that for sure.
Is there a reason in your mind why there have been so few firings this year, or is it just cyclical?
Cyclical, but it's not over, Ray. It's not over. You're counting Indianapolis as an opening, I would assume, because I do think they're going to do interviews I don't get a feel whether it's Jeff Saturday has a real chance of coming back, but Jim Irsay is one of those iconoclastic guys who doesn't care what people think about him, but even he would have to admit that this has not gone well. And it's amazing to me how the Colts have fallen. You know, the Colts are really down with Houston right now. They're down at that level right now because all the guys who they thought were really good players have either been hurt too much, like Shaquille Leonard, or like their offensive line, they've just massively underperformed. And so I don't know what's going to happen in Indianapolis. That's a curious case, but you know, let's wait and see what happens after the dust settles, like with the Rams. And then there's always one or two surprises. How's Mike Vrabel feeling right now? I would assume that Mike Vrabel is back, but let's see how he's feeling. How's Robert Kraft going to be feeling about Bill Belichick? I'm not suggesting in any way that Belichick is going to be out. I'm just suggesting that Robert Kraft, enough people who cover that team and who know that team over the years have hinted and said that Kraft, when he meets with Belichick after the season, is essentially going to say, you are not coming back with that offensive staff next year. You're not going to do it. Let's get a professional quarterback coach and a professional offensive coordinator in here.
Peter King.
Kraft is just, I think Kraft is going to exert his will a little bit.
Peter King with us here on 95.7 The Game. We've already gone long. Let's go real quick, lightning round. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, only three outcomes available. Back with the Packers, another team but still in the NFL, or retires from the NFL. Where would you place your bet?
Back with the Packers. I think he loves tormenting the press and public with, oh, I don't want to give my jersey away. It's my last game. It might be my last game. And I'm going to walk off the field with my arm around my best buddy, Randall Cobb. It might be our last time walking off the field, because that's clearly the image he presented. I think he comes back.
Lovie Smith, most costly win in NFL history in terms of Chicago now has the number one overall, and would the Bears actually consider trading Justin Fields?
They'd be stupid if they did. Luke Getsy and Justin Fields are a very good match. I think they wouldn't mind trading their pick, but they're not going to pick a quarterback if they stay at number one. They'll take either that Georgia defensive player. They'll take the best defensive player on the board.
And finally, in maybe one of the prime examples that things change quickly in this league, we looked at the NFC West 12 months ago and said, well, here's an absolute juggernaut for years to come. Everyone feels locked, loaded, their futures are kind of secure, and Seattle is about to hit a reboot. Well, look at Seattle. They're the team that's actually got, you know, a little bit of a present because they're in the playoffs, obviously,
yeah,
and a bright future, but there's also a limitation on a 32-year-old Geno Smith just repackaging the magic, and we'll see in the postseason again next year, folks. Like, I wouldn't bet on Seattle's immediate future as much as I like their long-term future with the draft picks they got coming their way. All of a sudden, the Rams look like an absolute mess, Peter, and yeah, the Arizona Cardinals might be the biggest mess in the NFL, not named the Houston Texans. So what do you think of the NFC West now?
I think it's a really good time to be a great team in the NFC West, because I could see the 49ers going 6-0 in the division next year, no matter who their quarterback is. And my guess is the quarterback's going to be Brock Purdy. I don't see a scenario, unless something weird happens in the next 2-3 weeks, that isn't the case. But, you know, we'll see. But I do think there's one thing. You know, John Schneider, even though he has had some checkered drafts in the last few years, he just hit a home run with his draft this year. He got four excellent starters out of this draft, and he's got two picks likely in the top 20 of next year's draft. And so I don't know whether he'll take a quarterback or not. He's the kind of guy who can do anything. But I would feel confident if I were a Seattle fan that they will be very competitive next year, no matter who plays quarterback for them. But Seattle will be the biggest test for the Niners next year, and probably the year after. Everything has to be healthy. Everything has to be right for the Rams with 35-year-old Matthew Stafford and a well-beaten-up Cooper Kupp as the two huge offensive pieces. They don't have an offensive line. You don't know. I mean, I know Aaron Donald told me before the year, I'm playing 2 years. I'm not positive he will. We'll see what happens. Rams are very much in flux, but I will tell you this. There is not a soul in that organization who would trade the Super Bowl last year if they knew that they would be uber competitive for the next 5 years.
No doubt about it. Trophies officially matter. Peter, thank you so very much. As always, it's a pleasure. We'll do it again next week and hopefully be talking about the 49ers and who they've got coming up next.
Thanks a lot. Stay dry, guys. I feel for everybody out there.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.